Second Samuel chapter 6 records a tragedy and a triumph. David is moved after becoming king over the unified Israel and establishing a kingdom capital there in Jerusalem, after building additional suburbs and fortifying walls and infrastructure projects and building himself a house. David is moved to bring the Ark of the Covenant out from obscurity. It had been for 70 years in Kirjath Jearim. He wants to bring it to the capital, and he wants to give it a place of honor, a place of prominence there within the people of God. For 70 years, the Ark resided in a garage, not consulted, not addressed, lost, forgotten. And yet David is stirred, he's moved, and that is a wonderful thing. The tragedy is he goes about doing that, bringing the Ark to Jerusalem in such a way that God had not mandated. God had been very specific within the law, from Exodus to passages within Leviticus, that the Ark was never to be touched, that it was to be carried. In fact, the Ark was constructed with these rings and particular poles that they were to be used to carry the Ark. And not just any Levite was to carry, but a very specific family of Levites. God was very specific, very detail-oriented on his instructions for how the Ark was to be transported. And David jumped the gun. He didn't consult with God's word. He consulted with counselors who didn't know any better. And there was a tragedy. A man lost his life. David is freaked out by it, and they put the Ark into a poor man's home, a man by the name of Obed-Edom. Word after a couple months reaches David that the house of Obed-Edom has been blessed, and David's heart is stirred anew to bring the Ark, and now he consults God's word, and he realizes the error of his ways. And again, his heart had been sincere the entire time, but David learned some valuable lessons that God cares how we do things as much as what results. And so they send this family of Levites. They do it the right way. They bring the Ark to the city, and there's great fanfare and rejoicing. But there is still a somberness. An incredible number of animals are sacrificed in the process of this, to the point that David, in offering these peace and trespass offerings, they have a big potluck. Everyone, every family is given meat and rice cakes and wine, provision. It is quite an ordeal, quite a thing. And we're looking at Psalms. We can't say for certain that they were written during these time periods, these Psalms of David. And yet, I do think that they can be attributed, and they provide us, therefore, some insight. We're going to look at two. Psalm 24 we'll start with. It's titled, "The King of Glory and His Kingdom." Now, this psalm, like so many others, really reveals to us, it emphasizes the prophetic ministry of King David. David had two different ministries. He was king, but he was also a prophet that David would prophesy. And in these psalms that he would write, there would be very clear messianic undertones, foreshadowing, picturing Jesus in the experiences of Christ, not just during his earthly ministry, but even during his millennial reign. In fact, so often you'll find this in particular with the Gospel of Matthew, that Matthew in presenting these things of Jesus will point back to. So it was written by David of old, and he'll quote the psalm in which David was writing of Jesus into the future. This is a great example, Psalm 24, of being messianic. "The earth is the Lord's in all its fullness, the world and those who dwell therein." You know, this is all God's. The world and everyone who lives here, God has control over. It's his. "For he has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the waters," speaking to creation when God separated the firmaments and then caused dry land to come out of the water. David attributing a literal interpretation to the Genesis creative narrative. Verse 3, "Who may ascend into the hill of the Lord? Or who may stand in his holy place?" And then he answers his rhetorical question. He says, "He who has clean hands and a pure heart." Now, let's take a moment. He who has a clean hands and a pure heart. Let's think how many human beings that would that could be attributed to. Could it be attributed to David? Absolutely not. Even at this point in his life, David has made numerous mistakes, and he's been a man of blood. Could it be Abraham? It couldn't be Abraham because he had lapses of faith and you know, slept with Hagar and produced a son of the flesh that has been warring with the son of promise. Could it be Jacob? He was a hill catcher. Could it have been Moses, murderer? Gideon? No. Samson? Unlikely. Like, who is the only one who has clean hands and a pure heart? Meaning everything that they've done is pure, undefiled, but every motivation and intention is also equally pure and holy. Well, there's but one person that could ever be attributed to, and that would be Jesus. Continuing, who has not lifted up his soul to an idol, nor sworn deceitfully. He shall receive blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. This is Jacob, the generation of those who seek him, who seek your face. Selah. Pause, instrumental jam session. Think about it. Verse 7. Lift up your heads, O gates, and be lifted up, you everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in. Who is this King of glory? The Lord strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, O you gates. The gates, speaking of Jerusalem, as they're making their way in. David's dancing, but what is he singing? Maybe he's singing this, a new song. Lift up your heads, O you gates. Jerusalem says, lift up, you everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in. Who is this King of glory? Again, he asks rhetorically. The Lord of hosts. He is the King of glory. You know, Jesus will enter Jerusalem again. Jesus entered Jerusalem for the last time after being arrested there in the Garden of Gethsemane. He was taken back into the city where he stood six different trials, where he was slandered and lied about, spat upon, beaten, mocked. Ultimately, it would be within this city of Jerusalem, within those gates, that Jesus would be condemned, convicted, sentenced to an execution as if he were a common criminal. The crucifixion would follow a brutal scourging, where then Jesus would again leave the city for the final time. Jesus would leave, likely out through the sheep gate in the north to a place called Gethsemane. He would cross the Kidron, where the blood of the Lamb would flow, and Jesus would die for the sins of the world to be buried in a garden tomb. There's no mention in the resurrection, the 40 days of resurrection life of Jesus, of him entering back into the city of Jerusalem. Not necessarily through the gates anyway. But Jesus will come again. We're told that there's a future day where Jesus will touch down again on the Mount of Olives. And he'll cross back across the Kidron. And he'll enter back through the East Gate. And he'll declare Jerusalem to be his capital. This prophecy is so well known that the Muslims, when they had control of Jerusalem, have boarded up the Eastern Gate and have put a cemetery outside of it, trying to deter the arrival and entry of Jesus. David writing as he's going through the city, picturing a future day. So we have Psalm 24. We also have Psalm 132, which is 18 verses. Again, we're not going to be able to do a full exposition, but to look through it, it's titled A Song of Ascent, and it fits within this section. And people, if you do study, they'll attribute it to Hezekiah the king. Hezekiah comes much later than David. And so likely, and a lot of scholars believe that David probably wrote this, but it was compiled into this order of psalms, the Psalms of Ascent, by Hezekiah much later. It's a psalm of prayer. It begins, Lord, remember David in all of his afflictions. And I think that's the first, David speaking in the first person. How he swore to the Lord and vowed to the mighty one of Jacob. Surely I will not go into the chamber of my house or go up to the comfort of my bed. I will not sleep. I will not give sleep to my eyes or slumber to my eyelids until I find a place for the Lord, a dwelling place for the Mighty One of Jacob. Again, David's motivation. He's built a house, but there's a stirring within him that didn't sit well. David had a home, but God was chilling out in a garage. Verse 6, behold, we heard of it in Ephrath. We found it in the fields of the woods. Speaking of Kirjath-Jearim, literally the fields of the woods. Let us go into his tabernacle. Let us worship at his footstool. Arise, O Lord, at your resting place. You in the ark of your strength. Let your priests be clothed with righteousness. And let your saints shout for joy. This phrase, we found it in the fields of the woods. It speaks not just to the location of the ark, but its place within the kingdom, meaning zero place within the kingdom. It's as though it had just been left out into the woods. It was not on the roadside. It was not in a city. It was not placed up on a hill into a position of prominence. It was abandoned. And that really reflects this 70-year period, and David is wanting to rectify this. Verse 10, for your servant David's sake, do not turn away the face of your anointed. The Lord has shown in truth to David. He will not turn from it. I will set upon your throne the fruit of your body. If your sons will keep my covenant and my testimony, which I teach them, their sons shall sit upon your throne forevermore. This messianic covenant that God makes with David. For the Lord has chosen Zion. He has desired it as his dwelling place, which is interesting. Like, what was David's motivation in capturing this city of the Jebusites? Well, apparently it was the Lord that had chosen Zion and had revealed that and commissioned David to take the city. Verse 14, this is my resting place forever. Here I will dwell, for I have desired it. I will abundantly bless her with provision. I will satisfy her poor with bread. I will also clothe her priests with salvation, and her saints shall shout aloud for joy. There I will make the horn of David grow, the power. I will prepare a lamp for my anointed. Speaking of preparing the path for my anointed, speaking of Jesus. His enemies I will clothe with shame, but upon himself his crown shall flourish. Again, you can imagine that as David is building out Jerusalem and as he's bringing the ark into the city, and he had prepared a place, and really when you get to the next chapter, David's desire is to build a temple. That idea gets met with the kindness, the blessing, the gratitude of God, for it was well intended. But it wasn't for David to build the house of God. That would be reserved for his son, Solomon. But David's heart here. And as all of these things are happening and the emotions and seeing it all and this prophetic element of seeing what the city would be in the future and how God would use it and the ultimate king that would sit upon the throne, oh, it must have overwhelmed him. And you can see how these psalms, these expressions of his heart, would come flowing out. Very, very cool. If you enjoyed this, check out our website, calvary316.tv/histories. You can not only see these psalms, but you can also check out the Bible studies, the passages, the stories that they connect with. God bless.